I found a Ben Ishchai. So it works out really, really well. Parshas Shmini Tashanayim Gimel, the Ben Ishchai says, we have a very interesting parsha ahead of us. It was the eighth day, and this eighth day is when everybody gets themselves set and they're ready for the Mishkan to come down. We all know what happens. They set everything up, and Moshe Rabbeinu was involved for 7 days straight. And Aaron did everything that they were supposed to do. Aaron worked on that eighth day and did everything. All the katos, all the what's it called, the olas, everything that was supposed to be done was done. The only problem was there was no fire. There was no fire. So Nadav and Avihu, right, the two older sons of Aaron, went inside the Beis HaMikdash, and they made their own fire. They made their own fire inside the area of the either the Kodesh or the Kodesh Kedoshim. I'm not so sure exactly where. I think it seems to be a Machlokas Rishonim. And it says, it destroyed everybody. They sang, and they fell on their faces. But the same time when that ish came down from Shemayim, they put a fire in it, some that they were not commanded to do. Another of you died in front of a Kaddish Baruch Hu. The Midrashim are about, they're all over the place over whether or not they were tzaddikim gemurim, who were beyond this world, as Moshe Rabbeinu said, they're greater than me and you, our own, right? Are they unbelievable tzaddikim, ones at the highest level of Gan Eden because of the level that they were on and what they did, or were they sinners? They actually did something wrong. This was a chait, and what they had done was something that was entirely bad. I'm sorry?
That would be a sin.
Yeah, but on their level.
But there's still something wrong.
Fine, but it's like Avraham Avinu. What kind of a sin was it is really the question. Either way, Aaron was silent. Aaron did not say a thing. He did not get involved. He didn't want to say anything whatsoever. They were taken out, and the little laws of Avelus were given over to Aaron. What Aaron was not allowed to do on that day is a Kohen Gadol cannot have any signs of Avelus. He's got to show himself as a Kohen Gadol at all times. The last thing that he says, Vayidaber Hashem al Aaron Lamor, Hashem said to Aaron saying, Yayin v'shechor I'll taste ato vanecha yitach. Wine and beer you should not drink, or anything that makes you drunk you should not drink, you and your sons with you, when you come to the Ol Moed Lo Samusa, and then you will not die. Chukat Olam Dorosechem Lahavdil ben HaKodesh uben HaKol, to separate between what is holy and what is not, ben HaTami ben HaTor, between what is Tami and what is not. Now the question is, hold on a second. We use wine every Friday night in order to make Kiddush. The amount of wine that a Kohen drinks that makes him usher to serve in the Beis Mikdash is a reviz. As you well know from your exploits on Pesach, 3.3 ounces is a reviz, according to every sheet except for the Chazon Ish. 3.3 ounces. This is a 9-ounce cup, I think. I don't know what to say. It's a big cup. I don't know. It's an 8-ounce cup, let's say. It's an 8-ounce cup altogether. 3.3 ounces is about that much wine. And that in and of itself will be enough to make Aaron not be able to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. Why? Because that's chol. That's tameh. And Tahor in Kodesh cannot be involved in something like that. You're not allowed to drink. And even 3.3 ounces, you wouldn't be able to drink. Now, I can understand if you're going to tell Aaron don't get drunk. I can understand if you're going to tell him don't drink 3 cups of wine or a couple shots of whiskey. I can totally understand that. But you're going to tell me that a reviz of wine is going to be enough to separate them? That's the question that Ben Ishchai has. Why in the world is this law so absolute that we tell him you're not allowed to drink any wine, even a reviz of wine, when you go inside the Beis HaMikdash? What's the difference between them? And here's the idea. He's going to give two different answers. They're both amazing answers. One answer is that there's two different types of simcha. One type of simcha is a person drinks wine and he acts with kedusha. He gets himself involved in the mitzvah that he's in. For example, Purim, I guess, would be the perfect example, though it's not usually utilized to its fullest, you know, extent. But the idea of Chayiv Inishlum Asumi Vapurya Adlo Yada, the idea of using it in the right way is that you become a bigger tzaddik, so that you can use it correctly. That's one way. Pesach, the 4 cups, the idea of drinking 2 cups or 1 cup at least before you have anything in your stomach is that Magid goes a little bit better. So Magid should be there a little bit better. Now granted, 3.3 ounces is not going to do much for people, but you probably had a Kiddush cup that was the size of this and you drank 7 or 8 ounces in the very, very beginning. Unlike me, where my mom went to Crate and Barrel 7 years ago and bought about 50 of the 3.5 ounce cups, the glass little cups, which were perfect for drinking on Pesach night, especially for people of the wine capacity as me, which is obviously a tremendous amount. That's number one. That's That's the first one. There's a second one where a person acts only with Kedusha. And when a person acts with Kedusha in the right way, he davens, he learns, and he understands what he's doing and he does it correctly, there is a simcha involved there. It's a different type of simcha. It's not a simcha of something outward, it's something inward, where you feel it on the inside, and there's an inner Kedusha, there's a simcha that pulls out from within you. The difference is, the second one, the one made of Kedusha, never stops and it keeps growing. While by wine, it gets harsher and harsher. You start off bisimcha, but then we all know what happens to a drunk. After he drinks a little bit more, he turns into a monkey. He drinks a little bit more, turns into a lion. Drinks a little bit more, turns into a pig, and he's wallowing in his own throw up in the middle of the ground. That's what ends up happening. But we all know what happens when a person drinks too much. That's the difference between a drunk and somebody who has simcha, a drunk who has simcha, and another person who is kadosh, who has simcha in that way in and of itself. So when a person is in a state of holiness, of where he's supposed to be in Kedusha, sitting in the Beis HaMikdash, obviously none of us have ever been, none of us have ever experienced such a thing, and most of us are never going to experience it, except for maybe the two Kohanim that are sitting over there. We're not going to experience that type of thing, unless the Or HaChaim HaKadosh is right, and the Bechors are going to go back, and then we rock. But if not for that, I know, we're there. But if not for that, I mean, we're never going to have that experience. But working in the Beis HaMikdash, where you have a constant presence of the Shechina, where He's around you at all times, there's a fire coming down from Shemayim, there has to be a simcha there. There has to be some type of simcha. What Hashem is saying is, don't mix those simchos. Don't mix the simcha of wine, which eventually stops, with the simcha of the Beis HaMikdash that only grows and grows and grows. Don't allow yourself to mix those simchas together. That's one answer to the Ben Yishchai. But another way of looking at it is through a mashal. Two people were walking on the road. One is a baker, one is a doctor. I shouldn't even say a baker. A baker is not a real word for it. A candy man would be a better word for it. And one is a doctor. So each one is looking for work, and they can't find work in their present town. So each one is going to other places, you know, socialized medicine. So they're each going to different places. The doctor looking for his place of work, right? The candy man for his place of work. So the candy man turns over to the doctor and says to him, listen, you know, we should walk together. We should go together. It'll just be easier on both of us. If we go together, we'll maybe be able to find work in the same area, and it'll work out well for both of us. Said the doctor to the candy man, you don't understand. We do the exact opposite of what the other person wants. I'm a doctor. I want people to be sick. If I want people to be sick, I want to be able to heal them, and that's all that. You want people to be extremely healthy. You want people to be healthy that are there so that they're not sick, because healthy people eat a lot more. So you want people to be healthy. I want people to be sick. We're not going to go well together. We shouldn't go to the same place. Number one, it tells you the psychology of a doctor. I'm joking. That's number one. Number two, right, it's the idea of, if you're working in exact opposites, you shouldn't go in the same place. That's a Ben Yishchai, a little bit different from what he said before. Wine is made for people to drown in their own sorrows. That's what it was created for. Yayin Oved L'Marei Nefesh is really what it is, for the embittered of soul. When you drink a little bit of wine, it's able to take away, drown your fears, drown your sorrows, drown the problems that you have in the wine that you're drinking. While Kedusha is there to be able to build you up and not knock you down. Says Aaron, I can't drink wine, and this is what the Torah is trying to tell me, because if I would, it's doing the exact opposite of what my service in the Beis HaMikdash would do. Service in the Beis HaMikdash is supposed to bring me up, lift me up to a higher level. This service of drinking wine is supposed to bring me down to a different level. That's the idea behind it, and that's why it says, "Vayidaber Hashem al Aaron Lamor." Should know, by the way, this is not just over here. The Ben Yishchai explains this in every single part. Whoever says the word Lamor, he explains how it applies. It's Lo Mar. Don't allow it to be bitter. And therefore, don't drink wine. And that's what the Lamor is referring to over here. It's the exact opposite of what it's supposed to refer to. Okay.
What was the first answer?
I'm sorry? So the first answer was that they both lead to Kedusha just in different ways. And that the more you drink of wine, the further away you get from that Kedusha. But wine, in the beginning, can be very, very Kadosh. Right? Well, Kedusha is obviously just Kadosh, and it grows higher and higher and higher. But the more wine you drink, the less. Here we're saying, no, wine is never for Kedusha, while this is entirely for Kedusha. Those are the two differences between how the Ben Yishchai wanted to explain it. In theory, you can work them both out together with one another. Because we all know that at the end of the parsha, which is by far my favorite part that I could go into for 17 years and I still wouldn't be done with it, is the kosher and non-kosher animals. Those animals that you're allowed to eat, those animals that you're not allowed to eat, right? As we all know, all animals need split hooves and chewing their cud. All birds, if they're not mentioned in the Torah, then they're kosher. Our problem is we have no idea which birds are actually mentioned in the Torah and whether they're genuses and not just species. Then afterward, we have fish need
chaos.
skins and scales. I was really hoping someone would say skins and fails, because that's usually what ends up happening when you say it really quickly, but it's fine. It's the same way that people usually say dust and a view when they try to say nugget and a view. And then afterward, we have locusts, which, okay, is not for us, because we don't know exactly what that is. Then it goes into the Shmona Shvatim. That's really the end of the parasha. At the very, very end, after everything is said and done, we go through all the different tuma and all the different things over here. It says that if you eat from this flesh, you will become tamed. It says, do not make yourself disgusting by eating these bugs and all these things in the ground. Do not become tummy through them. Because if you do, you will become defiled by them. You will be defiled by them. The word vinit, vinit mesem is a weird word. Vinit mesem is spelled bug nun tes mem sup mem. Instead of tame with an aleph, the aleph is taken out of here. Vinit mesem, according to the Medrash, says that we're referring to something called timtum alev. That when a person eats something that's not kosher, there's something that happens to the person where he's not able to make the right decisions. He can't make the right decisions. It's absolutely impossible. I can give you examples of this, but I don't want to say things because people get... there's just... if you wanted to make a muscle, but this could be based on a real story. Okay? A guy came up to me and said he has no feeling for Yiddish credit, he can't feel anything whatsoever. So I said, where did you eat lunch today? And he told me McDonald's. I said, there's no chance you can start when you have a Big Mac in you. I think Big Macs are McDonald's, right? They're not Burger King. Those are Burger King. Whoppers are Burger King. So Big Mac is McDonald's. Yeah, Ben Yamin would know. He's farty. You can eat anywhere. But yeah. So either way. Yeah, I know. It's fine. Either way, so the guy told me, you just ate over there. And I told him, how in the world are you supposed to get happy when you have that garbage inside you? I know you think to yourself, you aren't what you eat. You are 100% what you eat. Eating certain types of foods, these types of foods, have an ability to be metamtein the lave, which has an effect on the heart, which sort of covers it up, which doesn't allow it to be involved in cutter things. It doesn't allow it to be there.
You may have made that decision in the first place to eat at McDonald's, though. Let's say the first time you ate at McDonald's, you didn't have that inside of it. So the last adjustment was purely intellectual.
So that was my next line. It's sort of like Avera Gorera Savera. One Avera leads to the other, which eventually led him to go, probably with a typhus mumum, where he didn't want to spend more than a dollar and a half. It costs a dollar. Can you imagine? $1. You go there. No wonder all these people are so big. It's a dollar. Either way, you go... I'm sorry?
7,000 will go out of business. It's a great stop. 100%. You can't cook for that.
It's absolutely ridiculous. No, of course not. Of course you can do it. But it starts with Avera Gorera Savera. You don't look. Avera Gorera Savera is the idea. And eventually, you're literally swimming in it. You're literally swimming in tuma. You can't get yourself out. There's a mashal that the Chofetz Chaim gives. It's a beautiful mashal. Absolutely beautiful mashal. There's two guys who own stores in a strip mall. Now, one guy owned a store and it was a perfume store. The way he got his customers is that he would open up his door and the perfume smell would waft throughout the entire area. People would smell it and be like, where's that smell coming from? They would immediately walk into the store. And that's how he got his customers. People didn't know that this guy was there, but the smell just got everybody. They all had to go inside to go see what the guy was selling. He made a ton of money off it. But soon, his next door neighbor moved out and a person moved in who, in the times of the Chofetz Chaim, was a leather tanner. I don't even know what the equivalent would be right now, but it would have to be like a garbage man, a recycling bin. Something moved next door to him where they opened up their doors and the smell was absolutely terrible and it drowned out the smell of the perfume. So the perfume guy was a very finicky person, a guy who couldn't really stand bad smells. He had to close his door, said he wouldn't smell the stuff from the store right by him, but that meant that nobody was going to come by. Nobody walked by because nobody smelled, all they smelled was the garbage, and they immediately walked away. Nobody even realized there was a perfume store right next to it. So they just walked away and the guy was losing money after money. Nobody would walk into a store or even make any business whatsoever until finally he was completely out of business. Picked up a sign, put it up in front of his store and said, going out of business sale, and you know, whatever you whoever wants to buy the store, I can rent out the store to anybody that wants, right? So the guy who was right by, you know, the guy who owned the garbage dump or the recycling bin, he came by and he saw the sign and he said, this area would be perfect to add on to my store. So he looks at the perfume guy client says, listen, how about you become my partner? We'll make a ton of money. We'll double my business. And I make a ton of money as it is. If I double it up, it's going to be even more so. Come with me and we'll be able to do it together. So the perfume guy said, you got to give me a couple minutes to think it over. He couldn't stand the smell of the guy. He went home, he thought about it. He said, listen, it's better than not making any money at all. So he went back and he said, okay, fine, I'll do it. So he goes in, he goes into the business. And the first day was Gehenna for him. He couldn't take it. The smell was horrible, but he put something on his nose, and he went through. As time went down, he took the thing off his nose. As time went down, he got so used to it, to the point where he became so annoyed with finicky people. People would walk down the street, they'd hold their nose. As he walked home, his wife would say to him, you stink, you stink, you smell like garbage. This is the worst smell in the world. He was like, I hate those finicky people. I can't stand those people that can't deal with this type of a smell. We are made to be men. We have to be men, and we have to smell like men. You could do the Old Spice whistle if you want. It's got to be like... We need to smell this way. His wife looks at him and says, how far have you fallen? How far have you fallen? You used to be this guy that couldn't stand anything except for the most beautiful perfumes, and now you're working at garbage stuff and you expect everybody to smell like you? You smell like a piece of garbage. And that's not good coming from your wife. That's like number one in like Shalom Bias issues. So you never want your wife to tell you you smell like garbage. It's worse if you tell your wife she smells like garbage, but this is just number two maybe. It's right around there. That's the idea. Says the Chofetz Chaim, as soon as a person does an aver, immediately he is surrounded and enveloped by a koach atuma that allows him, that once you get used to it, you're there. That's what Timtum Alev is. You're there. You don't want to get out. That's just part of your essence, your being, and you don't want to let go. Example, and it's the Chofetz Chaim, so what do you think he's going to talk about as an example? Lashon Hara or Mishnah Berurah, good, but Lashon Hara is my answer. So Lashon Hara says, when a person speaks a little bit of Lashon Hara, Kadosh Baruch Hu will make sure that all of his dibur is affected. Anything that comes out of his mouth, including his tefillah and his Shemona Esrei, is surrounded by the Lashon Hara and grabbed by it so that it doesn't go up to Shemayim. Can you imagine? If you speak Lashon Hara and then you go Daven Mariv, that means that all of your tefillah of Mariv, everything that you just daven, will not go up. You'll go up to Shemayim and say, well, looks like you never daven Marvin, Tavshanai and Gimel. Like, what do you mean? Of course I daven Marvin, Tavshanai and Gimel. I went to Minyan every single day. And they said, no, because it never made it up here. Your tefillah was grabbed by those people, the Lashon Hara that you made, and it never made it up. So it's as if you didn't daven Marv. Now granted, it's better than not davening Marv at all.
I was going to say,
yeah, because if you don't daven Marv at all, the Lashon Hara gets even worse. This, at least, it grabs the Lashon Hara, takes it away, but you don't get the mitzvah. It, so to speak, takes away the mitzvah from it. You try to go to Gan Eden, says the Chofetz Chaim, and I think this is a little bit of scarier. All the words that you said that were usher run up to you, grab you, and they drag you through the streets. Can you imagine that? I don't even know what a word looks. I can't even imagine what this looks like. They drag you through the streets and all the city can stand outside their doors shaking their heads at you. That's what they do. That's what it's like when you go up to Shemayim after you said things that are awesome.
What happens to the Torah?
Exactly. Everybody has to call him Tomei and throw him outside, and that's the idea. We'll probably get to something similar. It's like a chassan. He gets such a great... I love this mashal also. It's like a chassan. He's going on his way to his wedding. You got to love the Chofetz Chaim for every single mashal that he gives. A chassan on the way to his wedding. He's wearing beautiful wedding clothes, all white, because that's what they wore back then, because we only wear... Okay, anyway. But we wore all white, clean clothing, and he's walking over to his chuppah. All of a sudden, these guys from the side of the street pick up this huge vat of tar and mud and garbage and fertilizer and everything and throw it all over the chassan. The chassan is sullied from head to toe. He's got garbage all over him, but he still walks to the chuppah. And everybody says to the guys, what's wrong with you? Why would you throw that in this chassan? The chassan is wearing beautiful white clothing. Why would you do it? And they said, first of all, we're his friends. We're his best friends. Not only that, but he prepared this before he went to the chuppah. He told us to go take this garbage and throw it on top of him. That's what it's like. That's the idea of the busha, the embarrassment that happens, that the Lashon Hara surrounds you when you're on your way to Gan Eden. It doesn't allow you to be as it is. Says the Ksav Sofer, let's add it on another level. Okay, that's one level. Let's add it on another level. Another problem with Timtum Alev is that it's metame a body to the point where you can't do anything correctly anymore. You want to say Shema. You want to be able to do the right thing, but you just can't. You can't do the Ratzon Hashem. This is why HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't allow any tzaddik to eat anything that's usher. It's a Gemara in Chulin and Daf Zayin. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will not allow a tzaddik to eat anything that's usher. If it comes near his mouth, he's not going to have it. The famous story with the Gra. where it wasn't even usher, but he had talked in. There was a lady that asked a certain shiloh on a certain chicken, but she didn't know that her husband went to ask a shiloh at the exact same time to the rav of the city. The woman went to the grov. The grov talked on the shiloh and said that it was usher, she couldn't eat it. But the rav of the city, the rav of Vilna, the Vilna Gaon was never the rav of Vilna. He was always just a person who sat and learned all day. The rav of the city talked that it was mutter. So they came back to the Rav and they said, listen, the Gra said it was usher. I didn't realize that my wife was going to ask at the same time, but the Gra came back that it was usher. So the Rav went over to the Gra's house where the Vilna Gaon was, probably his room, went to his room, and he said to him, you and I are going to eat together from this food tonight at the Shabbos table. I'm the Rav of the city, and I have to paskin, and unless you have a reason to say otherwise, unless you can fight me in halakha, there's no way that we can do it. The Gra was being machmar, but he said, okay, fine, I'm going to go to you tonight. I'm going to go with you tonight to eat at this lady. You can imagine what this lady was thinking that night. Like, I've got the Rav of the city and the Gra coming to taste from our soup tonight at our house. She sets up the house, you know, probably a hut, and the Gra sat on one side, the Rav then on the other side. She brings the soup to the table, and as she brings it in, fat or something that was schmaltz that was on the ceiling to hold the thatched roof together fell down from the ceiling, fell into the soup, and it was completely made inedible. Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't allow anyone, any tzaddik, to eat something that's usur, even if it's a suffik isur, if it's something that they hold that's not there, because we don't want to allow their minds to be affected. The Gra's mind with Tintum Alev means he misses out on billions of chidushim. That's the idea. We don't want that to happen. It can allow you to become more cruel, says the Ramban. The reason why every tamei bird is usur is because they bring cruelty within a person. Even the chasida is like the stork. The chasida is known as, it does chesed im chavrusel. You know what the Belzer Rav says? Belzer Rav says it only does chesed with its friends. It doesn't help anything else. And that's not a good mita. Even then, you have a bad mita that's there. That's the concept behind it. And that's why the Medrash brings down regarding these psukim, Tehillim, Perek Mem Pasuk Tes, which is, Eddie, go ahead. Okay, you don't know this one. It's fine. You might know Yud. Lastly, Ritzoncha Lohai Kafatzti V'Tzayroscha B'Tzoch Me'ai. I want to do your will at Kadosh Baruch Hu, but I can only do that when your Torah is in my stomach. If I have anything else that's in my stomach, I can't do what you want me to do. That's what the Ksav Sofer says. The Chidah, as I know, it's even worse. It gets even worse when a person eats these types of things. Minit Mason is missing an Aleph. The reason why it's missing an Aleph is because anyone who eats from these types of bugs is losing his das. Now why? Because it's impossible for the Ruach HaKodesh or the Shechina to be shorah upon a person who eats bugs, shkatzim, v'ramashim, and anything that is tamed. That's the idea of the Aleph. The Aleph is missing because Hashem is no longer with you, so to speak, if you eat something that's tamed. V'nit meisem bam means you become so tamed that you're filled with that tumah to the point where you cannot have the Shechina with you. So really, there's two differences over here. I'm sorry?
The locusts that were in Egypt,
yeah.
They were selling them in Israel.
They were selling them in Israel?
Yeah.
Went to our kosher?
I thought
they were chocolate covered
locusts.
There were people who were saying, they got made into the negative. People were eating something.
I thought the these are the ones that the Yemenites say that. No, you don't have to shout. There's no problem with Shechita. No, it's like this. There's no problem with Shechita. It's an interesting halakha. You know, there's a Gemara Chulin that says that anything that grows, anything that comes from the ground needs two simanim Shechita. There's a Gemara Chulin Nun Tes, I think. Anything that comes from the air needs one simanim Shechita, like a bird, one simanim Shechita. While a fish that comes from the sea doesn't require any simanim Shechita. So everybody asks, what about locusts? The answer is, where did Arba come from? By Mitzrayim. But where did it stem from?
It says
they came from the Yam, which means that there's some formation of locusts within sea. Maybe it means that their eggs spawn within rivers and oceans and whatever and stuff like that. Maybe it is something like that. Who knows where exactly it comes from those reeds, and that would be that. The Yemenites claim that they have it. The Yemenites claim it. Yeah, there definitely are there. There is a famous, the Sefer of Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim Kanievsky supposedly has all this simanim down, and the famous story is that when Reb Chaim Kanievsky was working on the Sefer, there was certain parts that he didn't know, and as he was working it, a locust came through his window, landed on top of his Sefer, and he picked it up and looked at it, and he got all the other simanim that he needed, finished off the thing, and then wrote it up. That's the mice that they bring down with Reb Chaim. So that doesn't happen to you or me. I mean, it does happen to you and me, and we would just take a bite out of the locust. Reb Chaim, he looked at the simanim and threw it out. He didn't really care for that. But that's the idea behind this concept of where it comes from. What's the nafkamina between what we were saying before? Either it's Tintum or it's Metami, or the Shechina walks away from you. You know what the difference is? There's a huge nafkamina. Can you ever do a tikkun and never do tshuva for it? If it's tintum alev, you can do tshuva for it. Because you just work on yourself and you'll eventually be able to get the tintum alev out. But if the Shekhinah walks away from you, you can never bring that back. You can get the Shekhinah back at a later on point. But you lost the Shekhinah for months, years, however long it's going to be, maybe even decades. You can't get that back. There's no tikkun for such a thing. That's the concept behind it. And that's what it means. There's no aleph, there's no limud there. I'm sorry? Maybe. There's a famous Ramban in Bava Metzia. Oh, I forgot the part is Yosef. Brings on a Medrash Shulchan Aruch. Eliyahu HaNavi asked Rabbi Nuroi. Anybody know who Rabbi Nuroi was? From an Arab in Yud Gimel. So it wasn't so long ago if you did Daf Yomi.
He
was definitely a Tana. The question is, was he Reb Meir or was he somebody else? That's a little bit of a kasha. Right? Rabbi Nuroi is a kasha exactly who he is. He asked him, why did God create bugs and all such creatures? Okay, that's what he asked him. Listen to this answer. He said, they really shouldn't be here. There's no reason for bugs. But every time a person sins, he looks at the bugs, Hashem, and he says, even these creatures, which are unnecessary in my world, I sustain them anyway and I allow them to be here. So too will I continue to sustain these sinners, since they are also necessary. They are really necessary in my world. Hear that? Bugs are only here to keep us alive. Not because they have any purpose. They don't, according to this medrash. They have no purpose at all. Maybe it's not referring to the spider, which is a famous medrash about David HaMelech. Maybe it's not referring to the hornet, which is another medrash with David HaMelech. Maybe it's not those. But regular flies and gnats and fleas, why are they here? Says this medrash, they shouldn't be. They shouldn't be here. There's no reason for fleas and flies and gnats to exist. They shouldn't be around whatsoever. But a Kadosh Baruch Hu looks at them, and through a Kal V'Chomer, saves us. And gives us rachamim. Now let's say you eat them. Let's say you would eat them. Then they do have a purpose. What's the purpose of the bugs?
To
keep people alive. To allow us to eat something so that we'd have food, right? Then they do have a purpose. So the Kal V'Chomer falls off. If the Kal V'Chomer falls off, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't show us rachamim. So in order for us to get that rachamim from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we cannot eat bugs. So every time you see somebody eating, I don't know, a lobster at some seafood place, or they're eating locusts or fleas or flies, go up to them, slap them, that would be awesome, slap them in the face, take this stuff out and be like, you're killing us! Because that's really what you're doing. Any time a bug is eaten, this is what ends up happening over here. That's the idea behind it.
Bugs also serve a positive purpose, I guess, in the same I saw a parish on the last mission on Mako,
right? Hashem
wants to increase
mitzvot.
So it says that, what's an example of mitzvot that God wanted?
Good example. Good.
Hashem said, don't eat bugs. Now, naturally, we wouldn't be inclined to eat bugs, but by staying away from bugs, we get mitzvot. So we get mitzvot, free mitzvot, basically.
Very, very good. Has anybody here ever had lobster? You don't have to admit to it if you have. Daniel? That's okay. Joking. Has anybody here ever desired lobster? I'll tell you honestly, not really. Lobster is the one thing.
Lobster.
Maybe a shrimp cocktail. Maybe. Maybe. Oh my gosh. Even so. A hornet, yeah. Okay, what?
All the nine by no. Say, if we get pork. Lobster
is the bomb. Unbelievable.
She said the one thing she misses is the lobster.
Lobster.
Beyond so good.
With butter on top of it. Unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. I mean, there's some equivalent. There is something that's kosher that's equivalent, because there's an equivalent to everything. It's a Gemara Chulin Kuflam Etes. There's something that's equivalent. The only question is what? You have to find what's equivalent to it. For example, the moach d'shibuta, it's a brain of a certain type of fish, is supposed to taste like chazer. Right? When Nachman's wife, Yalta, wanted something to eat, and she said, I wanted chazer, he said, what's the problem? Go give her moach de shibuta. Supposedly there were people that found the shibuta fish in the Iraqi rivers, and they had the brain. I don't know if it tastes the same. I don't know. It's brain of a fish. I wouldn't be disgusted by that. I don't eat brain normally, so I'm not sure I'd be into it. But I do eat eyeballs. It's a good story, but it's not for right now. Either way, we're going to end off with this Ramban. There's a famous Ramban. Right? I should really explain that now that it went on tape. Anyway. in a quick story, once when I was in Sot, I went to this certain Hasidic Rebbe's house. I have no idea which Rebbe it was. All he said was oy. That's all I remember from him. I think he passed away not too long ago, but I was told by one of his sons that there's a skula to eat the eyeball of the fish that they brought to the table. I said, really? Why? He said, no, it's a big skula for Parnassa, for whatever, Atzlacha and everything in Shiduchim. I'm like, alright, fine. So I took the eye and I ate it, and afterward he's like, I was joking. So I was like, are you kidding me? I found out later on there is some school of eating an eye, right? You're an idiot. That's about it. I did get married that summer, though. So anyway, there is, so let's just call it up to the eye, eat an eye. He says the reason why an Isser is batal beheter, the Ramban and Bab Mitzvah Perek Zayin, the reason why an Isser is batal beheter, meaning if an Isser can be batal on something that's mutter, and therefore you can eat the Isser, meaning if you have a piece of, let's say, pork chop, and it's mixed in with 60 times its size, right? It's mutter. According to the Torah, you should know if you have a piece of meat, you can't tell the difference between, I don't know how you can't, but if you can't tell the difference between chazer meat and two things of cow meat, and they're mixed up together, you can eat all three. All three of them mutter. Maybe you can't eat them all together, but you can eat every single one of them separately, because it's batal beheter. Isser is batal beheter. Why is that true? Why should that be so? Says the Ramban. An Isser is something which he cannot touch. So he doesn't want it to be around, and he certainly doesn't want it to increase. He doesn't want a lot of Isser, because a lot of Isser means what? He can't touch a lot of things. But he does want the Heter to increase. He wants the Heter to be more, so that there's more things that he's able to eat. Therefore, the Isser, which you're less inclined to eat, is batal to the Heter, which you're more inclined to eat and more inclined to keep around. You want more Heter, you want less Isser. That's the concept of what you want. However, if you're machshiv the Isser by eating it, that means you lose the whole concept. Because that really means you want the Isser just as much as you want the Heter, which means that Isser can never be batal the Heter, even b'shishim, and certainly not barov. There's nothing you can do about it. That's the concept. Who is the first person to come up with the concept of Tumtum Halev? The first person to come up with a concept and would not eat slash drink because of it, more drink than it is eat. What? Very good. By where? By the nursing, the nursemaid of Basia, Bitya Basparo. Moshe Rabbeinu would not drink. Says the Ramah, it's based on Shulchan Aruch Yoredeh Pei Aleph Halacha Zayin. Sim Pei Aleph Halacha Zayin. Says the Ramah, it's Aser because it's molded within you, Timtum Halev. That's what happens to a person who drinks milk from a non-Jewish woman, because the taste of the food that the non-Jewish woman eats goes into the milk that she then gives to the baby. And such treifus would not affect him. Says Tosos in Chagiga Tetzvav Amid Aleph. I just saw it. I was shocked by it. I was going through Chagiga and I found it in this Tosos. I didn't even realize this Tosos was there. He brings five other reasons for why Acher went off. Elisha Ben Avi, why he went off. Not mentioned in the Gemara. There are two in the Gemara in Chagiga Tetzvav Amid Aleph. There's one mentioned elsewhere in Sanhedrin, and there are five reasons given in Tosos and Chagiga. One of them is that his mother had wanted to eat something that was treif on Yom Kippur, and she was warned you shouldn't because of whatever, and she ate it anyway. And that was molded tarpus, which within Elisha ben Avuya, that eventually allowed him to go off. There are many pirushim in that concept and what happens with over here, but that's the idea behind Tinto Lev. So our summary for today is very simple. We talked about the simcha of wine versus the simcha of kedusha, and number two, Tinto Lev, its effects and its origins. The idea of where it comes from. We'll stop it. I guys have a great Shabbat.